The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Ukraine's incursion into the Russian region of Kursk has caught the Kremlin and most of the West by surprise. Vladimir Zelensky says the war is coming home to Russia as Putin vows to kick the enemy out. Despite Moscow's claims that it had stalled Ukraine's advance, the Institute for the Study of War finds that Ukraine is still penetrating territory in the Kursk region. To find out more about what's going on, we're joined by Patrick Bury, former NATO analyst and professor at the University of Bath. Patrick, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, it's clear they discovered a weakness and they exploited it.
Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, it was surprising because most of us watching the conflict closely were looking, seeing a picture where further southeast in Donetsk, the Ukrainians are under increasing pressure. They couldn't stop these slow incremental gains that Russia were making. And then to see them commit what are basically sections of elite brigades with good Western kit much further north into an unprotected, comparatively unprotected border area for a counterpunch when they're under such pressure really did seem surprising and quite high risk. But, you know, when the stakes are high, sometimes you take high risks. And that's probably what some of the thinking in the Ukrainian high command has been over the last few months. So, yes, it is. We'll have to see exactly just how it's going to end. I mean, you can't call these things a week in the early stages, as you rightly pointed out, it's all about exploitation, punching through the lines, moving again, trying to keep the Russians off balance. But over time, you would expect them to be able to stabilize. And that, of course, will stabilize the pocket and then try to reduce it. And then that brings problems for the Ukrainians, of course.
Yeah. And now the ambitions they have militarily, first of all, they probably, against the might of Russia, don't expect to hold the territory that they currently have occupied. But there are military objectives and there are political objectives.
There are, yeah. In the initial days, we didn't really know what they were, but there's more detail now. The Ukrainians have said three things, essentially. The military officials have said they're looking to primarily try to relieve pressure from Donetsk, so to draw off Russian forces. There's some evidence that that's actually been successful. We'll wait to see if there's any more of units being told to quit Donetsk and further south and move around. The Ukrainians also wanted to deliver a morale boost to the army in particular, which has been under a lot of pressure, and also to the nation, which, you know, there's not been that much good news, especially on the land side of things for a year. They have had successes in other places, of course. And finally, I think, and importantly, it was about showing Russians that the Ukrainians can counterpunch into their territory. And of course, you know, this is the most territory that Russia has lost since the Second World War. And in doing so, create some destabilization and chaos in the Russian regime. So I think they're the stated aims. There is a wider question mark about do they want to hold at least some Russian territory in case they're forced into negotiations under a Trump presidency.
Now, what about displaying to the West that all the arms that have been supplied by the West actually have an effective use?
Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, last summer, the Ukrainians in their much vaunted counter-offensive, they basically attacked really well-defended Russian lines, multiple lines of trenches, defense in depth, etc. And a lot of those untrained units which were using Western kit for the first time got chewed up, essentially. Now they've picked somewhere where it's much easier to break through. And they're using, you know, German Marder tanks. They're using American Stryker vehicles. The Bradley, as well, is turning out to be one of the best pieces of Western kit there is. So it showed that. And they've done the operation well, Pat, because not only have they managed to mass and concentrate without really raising too much of an alarm, it looks like some of the forces opposite them, the Russian forces, did say something to the high command, but it was ignored. But they've managed to put air defense over those advancing forces and electronic warfare. So they've created a bubble which has made it much more difficult for the Russians to get in and disrupt them.
Who'll get the blame in Russia? Putin certainly won't take any of it.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was very interesting. I don't know if you saw it yesterday with the Kursk governor starting to say how much land had been taken and how many settlements. And he got interrupted by Putin and said, let the military deal with that. You talk to me about what you're going to do to help them. So they don't like that petering out into the information space. But I think really this is Gerasimov, the head of the Chief of General Staff, has made numerous mistakes, and this is probably another one. And as I said, it looks like there were some warnings that there was a build-up there. One of the really interesting things here is how they did it, because, you know, what the Russians have got into, especially down in Donetsk, is this thing called persistent ISR, which is intelligence surveillance reconnaissance. And it's basically using your drones in tandem with guide bombs and guided missiles to spot things on the front line and up to like 30 miles behind it, and then target them. So it's very difficult to mass in secret, and you need to concentrate if you want to break through. So by choosing somewhere less defended further north, they've basically found a spot where there's less drones and they're able to concentrate and therefore punch through. So they've sort of restored a bit of the offensive capability that we've seen in the early stages of the war back, when a lot of us thought it was just going to be defense heaviest for the next.
Will it bring any significant targets in Russia within range were they to bring some sophisticated weaponry to the front?
Well, they already have. They've already had a large drone attack on a Russian airfield. We don't know exactly where that was launched from, but it was certainly in coordination with the ground assault. And then the big question is, you know, they're about 30 kilometers at the last time I looked from the Kursk nuclear power plant. Now, you know, obviously you've got the ongoing situation with the Russians occupying and up to a fair bit of dirty tricks with the Zaporizhia power plants down in Ukraine. So there could be a little bit of tit for tat for that. But I'm sure my hunch is here the Ukrainians would be much more cautious about playing with international standards and violating them, rather than potentially the Russians there. So there's that option. Of course, getting to closer to Belgorod, which is a major city, and getting that under artillery fire would be another potential aim for the Ukrainians. Anything to keep the pressure on and force Russian civilians out of their homes, and then create the political backlash from that as they go into Russia.
Do you know whether they have deployed the F-16s yet?
I don't. They have deployed Ukrainian fast jets over Russia, though. That's been confirmed. But I don't know about the F-16s. The F-16s are most likely to be used, I think, in a sort of air patrol, initially an air patrol role, and counter drones if they can. So that, rather than committing them to forward combat ops against, say, ground targets, Russian Air Force, I think that's going to be the most likely. Potentially also, one thing that they're capable of useful is against air defence in Crimea, trying to loosen the Russian hold on that as well.
Now, where does this all end, this particular phase of the war? You see a potential retrenchment by the Ukrainians hoping to hold on to a little Russian territory symbolically, but the 100,000 people who have fled...
It's very hard to call, Pat. Like, it all depends on the outcome of this, and there's numerous possibilities in terms of, you know, if for example, worst course of action for the Ukrainians, that they lose a lot of their elite brigades, the salient is reduced, and they have to withdraw into Ukraine, and then the Russians go on the attack from there. But it's not a success at all, is it? You know, it's high risk and hasn't paid off. If, on the other hand, they expand the salient and then over time retreat to defendable lines and try to hold it, that's potentially more of a success for them. But then you've got the same factor that, you know, they're shorter on manpower and they've just opened a new front which they have to man. So over the long run, you would expect, barring some sort of political change or maybe a collapse of the Russian military morale, you'd expect Ukraine at the current standing to be forced back. But let's see, you know, it's very difficult to call.
Patrick, thank you very much for joining us. Patrick Bury, Senior Associate Professor of Warfare and Counterterrorism at the University of Bath and former NATO analyst.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.